Joining us now, we're always pleased to have on this next guest, making time for us this morning, Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall. General Marshall, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Happy Friday, and thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. Obviously, a big headline yesterday, you've partnered with Congressman Adderholt, taking a look at the census. It seems as if the Biden administration is slow walking some of these numbers. And your lawsuit, I guess, seeks a remedy for that. Kind of walk us through what you're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, you know, this is really our phase two of our census litigation, the first of which we've talked about at length with you before, which is the case with Mo Brooks, in which we're attempting to deal directly with the issue of whether Alabama may lose a congressional seat if we count those who are in the country unlawfully. You know, this is really about the Census Bureau abiding by the rules that Congress has already set, and that is the fact that they have long since passed the deadline for providing states the census data. And one of the things that we think that they're doing through basically a mathematical calculation and an algorithm they're using under the guise of privacy is really going to scramble the data in a way that states like Alabama can't dive in to understand exactly what they've done. And so this is, again, an effort for us to be proactive, to ensure that we're protecting Alabama's interests, and also make sure the Census Bureau is abiding by the law and the Constitution and what they're required to do.
I mean, for a lot of people, it seems as if the longer this goes on, the more that could mean bad news for the state. And I guess the fear is from a lot of people that, you know, well, with the Biden administration, maybe it's a lack of trust, but they're looking at ways it's going to benefit them politically. Whatever that might be, whether that's valid or not, it does seem to be a concern.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a valid concern. And particularly if you look now, that I think there seems to be a consensus that the question is going to be whether Alabama or New York will be that state to lose one of the members in the House. And I clearly believe that those that are part of career census are going to want to favor New York versus Alabama, and definitely the Biden administration, when them taking over leadership of where the census is going. I don't see any reason why they would want to allow Alabama to get a fair shot. And so this is really our chance before, I think we said it in the complaint, before they scramble the egg, which is going to be allow the data to be in a format that we really can't dive into it, for us to be able to validate whether Alabama has been treated fairly or not.
How, you know, to get something like this going, to kind of slow down whatever the Biden administration may or may not be up to, I mean, this seems like the timeline has to move pretty rapidly.
I would think so. And in fact, you know, Jeff, it's not as if we're trying to slow them down as much as speed them up, you know, because they are now months after when they were required to provide this data to Congress. And, you know, interestingly, they wanted to use COVID as an excuse. But the reality is that they are continuing to manipulate this privacy algorithm in ways that we think are improper. And one of the things that I think is unique is that we've seen criticism of this effort from both those on the left and the right, because I think people understand the fact that if you can't truly understand the data when it's released, then how can you effectively do reapportionment? How can you determine how you should allocate your resources? And how is it that you truly understand the makeup of your respective states? And so this, I believe, will be a suit that will be met with support from a wide range of people, many that don't typically support the things that I do, Jeff. But I think that they will see that there's value in what we're trying to discover.
Well, do you find there'll be other states kind of joining Alabama on this, or joining Congressman Adderholt, that, you know, they stand to lose from this process as well?
I think we will, and the one thing that we're attempting to do is to seek a remedy fairly quickly, and that's through the vehicle of a preliminary injunction. And so we're doing everything that we can to be able to expedite the consideration of this case, because look, it matters to Alabama. It matters in the argument that we're making to preserve the seven representatives of Congress, but also for us to be able to effectively do reapportionment, just like every other state in this country is going to have to do. We got to have data that we can trust and that we understand to be able to allow that to work.
Well, and that's the other thing about this, Attorney General, that, you know, you're forcing these state legislatures to have to react in a way, in a very speedy way, I would say, by slow walking the data. And then, you know, here in Alabama, we do a special session or whatever, but then it comes right up against, after they draw the lines, right up against an election, And is that, you know, necessarily fair to candidates or whatever? But it does have some consequences later on down the line to our electoral process.
No, and I think our legislature is already seeing that, is that, you know, there's a bill, I think it's been filed for consideration of moving back our primary from the end of May until the middle of July, which is basically the last day that we can do it to be able to comply with other provisions of federal law that relate to elections. And so I think this is absolutely important. I mean, if you're going to be a legislator and want to run for a seat, you got to be able to make sure you live in that district, right? And I think that's true both from state elections as well as those that are running for Congress. And so this is a critically important issue, and one that in some respects is a very technical argument, but it deals with issues that matter. And we've learned our lesson a little bit, I think, Jeff, from the voting litigation that's gone out there as recently as the case that Justice Thomas made in dissent involving Pennsylvania, that, you know, the courts have been reluctant to get involved early on in the voting cases, but yet when they file it after the fact, the courts have said, well, it's basically over. So we're trying to be proactive with our arguments on census so that we can get in. So if, in fact, the Census Bureau has manipulated data to the detriment of Alabama, then we can validly make our argument and try to get a remedy at an appropriate time.
And I don't know how much you want to comment on what's going on in the Supreme Court, but that does seem to be a trend with elections, or with a lot of other things, I guess, beyond elections, that these big picture sort of big issue things that really have to do with democracy and elections or anything of that sort, the high court seems to be reluctant to wade into a lot of that, and I guess it has to be a concern.
No, it is a concern, and particularly relating to the elections. And this was, you know, three of the justices that dissented from the court's failure to hear the Pennsylvania case, which we were a part of. You know, the ability to provide guidance from the court on the Electors Clause is vitally important. And again, I think it's extremely relevant now when we see what Congress is doing with H.R. 1, where they're basically attempting to federalize state elections in a way that, at least for us in Alabama, is completely inconsistent with current Alabama law, that, you know, for the court to be able to weigh in and provide guidance is essential. And unfortunately, with opportunities to do so on the election side, they have refused to do it. And I think that's going to cause problems down the road.
And before we get to what they're trying to do in Congress with Pelosi's H.R. 1, give us an update on the suit, the other suit, the Mo Brooks suit, dealing with the way, I guess, immigrants are counted. Has there been any movement on that?
Yeah, there's been discovery for both parties, and Judge Proctor has asked for additional briefing material, and so that case continues to proceed. There's very technical arguments relating to standing that still exist for the court to be able to consider and evaluate before we can move through. But it's one that, again, is an important fight for us in the state. And in this case that we've just filed this week with Congressman Outerholt, we think is just another effort for us to continue to be able to stand up for Alabama and to be able to fight for all seven congressional districts.
We're joined by Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall here on the program. General Marshall, let's talk about H.R. 1, Pelosi's bill. Well, she's really big, I guess, in spearheading it. But it does seem that there is an impulse from the Democratic Party, from the left in Washington, D.C., that they really want to give the federal government purview over elections. You know, traditionally and typically, and I guess constitutionally, handled by the states. First of all, just that bill itself, your kind of reaction to it.
Oh, I think it's horrid. And when you see that, you know, Alabama was able to conduct its most recent election in a way that was an example for others across the country. We were able to have record voter turnout, no allegations of voter suppression, and we were able to report our results on election night. What a novel concept that is. And yet, we now see that through Congress, you know, they want to be able to take away the accountability provisions that we have with voter IDs being required. You know, they want to allow people to be able to show up on election day that are not registered in a district to be able to say they live there and they want to be able to vote. You know, we see multiple aspects of this involving mail-in voting, early voting, and curbside voting. They're not a part of Alabama law. And I think this is reversing what has been a very positive trend in Alabama and being able to provide accountability and confidence in the election results. And this is Congress, I think, acting beyond even what the Constitution is going to allow them. So hopefully the Senate will be much wiser than the House and be able to stop this from going forward. But I think this is a scary proposition if H.R. 1 were ever to be the law of the land.
I mean, you as a the chief law enforcement officer in a state would have to react. If this got to Biden's desk, he signs it into law, that would, you know, that would force you to act, at least in some kind of manner, if it be illegally or through the courts or something of that sort.
No, absolutely. You know, it's one of the real unique opportunities I have right now to be able to lead my Republican colleagues from across the country and many of the actions that already have been fighting with the Biden administration, whether that be the recent challenge to the deportation ban for 100 days, or you know what's going on with the Keystone Pipeline, or even now, you know, some of the issues relating to the social cost of carbon. I mean, there's a myriad of issues that we're going to be a part of, but this would be one that would be front and center, and I think you would see significant legal challenges across the country if, in fact, this were to become law through Congress.
And just broadly speaking, though, you know, a new administration, Biden administration, and he mentioned all of these executive orders, a lot of them dealing with energy policy, is when Trump took over and he took the same approach with a lot of executive orders, you saw a lot of legal action really step up and get into gear. Is that something we're just going to have to get used to with the Biden administration, you think, of responding to whatever they're trying to do through executive fiat? Or should it, you know, make it through a Democrat-controlled Congress? This is going to be what we got to deal with until the next election, perhaps.
I think clearly you're going to see both, you know, to the extent that the president attempts to legislate through executive orders, which is beyond his constitutionally vested authority. I think you'll see significant pushback from Republican AGs. And then the other thing that I don't think that you did mention is not just Congress, but also administrative agency action. You know, Justice Scalia talked about our agencies and the executive branch of government being that fourth branch of government. And I think to the extent that they begin to be able to withdraw much of what were the accomplishments of the Trump administration through reasonable regulations that were propounded and then other things that will be coming, I think that's likewise going to be fertile field for litigation for me and the rest of my colleagues across the country.
I mean, it's that whole administrative state. Some people may call it the deep state or whatever, but the bureaucracy, for whatever reason, it's just the culture, I guess, tends to gravitate toward left-of-center policies. And that's why, I guess, you know, and you mentioned you're the head of the Republican Attorney General's Association there, but you got to be on guard for a lot of what the bureaucracy is doing. And I guess a lot of people don't really think of that. They're more focused on the big picture, who's in charge, the head of the government. But there's a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of career bureaucrats and civil servants making policy where they shouldn't be making policy.
No, clearly. And I think when you see Congress not able to act, that's where administrations use those agency rulemaking authority to be able to accomplish what they can't through the lawmaking process. And so, again, I think the deep state exists and it's real. And one of the things that we will continue to do is to be able to track every proposed rule so that we have the ability to appropriately comment on what may be coming, but then have the ability to hold the Biden administration's feet to the fire with regard to doing it lawfully and doing it appropriately.
And finally, we'll get you out of here on this. I feel like we'd be remiss by not bringing this up, but had a rough year last year with law enforcement and a lot of officers, so, you know, in the line of fire. But I always want to know, things seem to be settling down, and I always kind of wonder about, you know, what are you hearing morale wise? Do things look like they're improving? We're coming out of a tough time with the, the defund the police stuff and what had happened last year. Where do you think we are now? Does there seem to be some kind of understanding or at least corrective action? and maybe that is making things a lot better, especially for public safety?
Well, in Alabama, I think we see the people that live in the state respect and appreciate what law enforcement does. And despite some of the national rhetoric, law enforcement is resilient, and they're dedicated and they're called. And so I think we appreciate not only what law enforcement does to be able to protect our communities, but also the role that they play in being able to keep us safe. And so I'm grateful for the many men and women around our state who every day answer that call to be able to protect and serve, and I think that I'm not alone with regard to Alabamians that are very grateful for that. But it's a tough job. It's a very difficult responsibility, but yet we continue to see fine men and women come to work every day to be able to keep us safe.
Attorney General, we appreciate your time this morning, and let's do this again real soon.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
That was Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall.